We're taking the bike to town? Where are the groceries supposed to go? I ask him. But he just laughs under his breath, turns on the bike, and twists the handle, revving the engine.
Climb on. I don't bite, he tells me,
and then he shoots me a mischievous look.
My little cousins, anyway.
I almost roll my eyes. Taking the helmet, I fix it over my baseball cap, but the front knocks the bill of the hat, making the fit uncomfortable. I fumble for a moment, finally pulling off the helmet again and then the hat. But Noah takes my arms, stopping me.
Like this, he says,
and he takes the hat, fits it backward onto my head, and then plops the helmet down over it, the bill now resting at the back of my skull. Oh. I'd rather have the cap in town since my hair is in shambles right now, so this works. He fastens the strap under my chin, and I try to avert my eyes, but he has this lazy half-smile on his lips that kind of makes my body hum, and blue eyes behind black lashes with the sides of his gray t-shirt cut out to show off golden muscular arms, and he wears persistently scruffy jeans because he never has to try too hard to impress anyone. I'm jealous. He doesn't have a plan in the world. It might have been a little nice to have cousins growing up. Maybe it would have been fun if I'd spent my summers here, growing up in the sun and the banter and the dirt with him. He makes me less nervous than Jake, too. His eyes meet mine, and I look away, taking over and forcing his hands away as I finish tightening the strap.
You ever been on a motorcycle? He asks.
No. I climb on behind him, situating my purse to my side as it hangs across my body.
I'm gentle, he assures me. Ask any girl.
I'm not any girl, I say, sliding my arms around him and locking my hands in front. You hurt me and you still have to go home with me and deal with me.
Good point.
He snaps the visor on his own helmet down and takes off, making my breath catch in my throat. Jesus. I instinctively tighten my hold and clench my thighs around him as my stomach drops into my feet. The bike wobbles more than a truck, and I dart my eyes side to side, trying to keep my balance, but he's not slowing down, and all I can really do is hold on. He might know what he's doing, but this is new to me. I blink long and hard and then simply look down, keeping my eyes off the road. These hills were a little steep coming up in the truck with Jake. I don't think I need to see us going down on a dirt bike. Is this even street legal? I hold him close, just staring at his t-shirt so I won't look at anything else, but after a moment, I try to loosen my grip on him a little. I'm plastered to his back. I'm probably making him uncomfortable. But he takes one hand off a handle and pulls my arms tighter around him again, forcing my chest into his back. He turns his head, raising his visor.
Hold on, he shouts.
Fine. I refasten my hands around him. We ride all the way down the gravel drive and come to the paved road, turning left and heading back the same way I came up 2 days ago, gravity forcing my body into Noah's the entire time. Once we're on blacktop and the terrain is a little more even, I raise my eyes and take in the trees on both sides, as well as the dense wooded areas surrounding us. Slopes, cliffs, and rock falls. I'm seeing the land around us a lot more clearly than when I came up in the dark the day before yesterday. Jake isn't lying. Even with all the trees that will shed their leaves in the winter, there are lots of conifers which will block visibility in the heavy snows. The land changes, gullies suddenly rising into steep cliffs, and the sides of the road are decorated with sporadic piles of rocks that spilled from uncertain land. It's dangerous enough to be up here in good weather. The city won't pay for a truck to shovel snow and salt the roads for one family. Which, I'm guessing, is exactly how my uncle wants it. Does Noah like it that way? His words from yesterday play back in my head. I would leave. I would leave in a heartbeat. You're here and you don't have to be. I have to be here, but I don't want to be. So why does he stay? Jake can't make him. He's a legal adult.
We twist and turn, winding down the road as it turns into a highway, and it takes a good 20 minutes before we see the town come into view. A couple of steeples peek out from the tops of the trees, and brick buildings line streets shaded with abundant green maples that I know will be orange and red come October. We come to our first stop sign, and he lifts up his visor now that we're slowing down. "Do you have others?" I ask. "Cousins, I mean." I don't know why I care, but he just shakes his head.
"No."
And then thinks better of it.
"Well, maybe. I don't know."
I'm it on his father's side, so that just leaves his mom. Where is she? I haven't known Jake long, but it's hard picturing him domesticated. Were they married? For a moment, it's easy to think well of him, raising two boys on his own, but it's also easy to understand how he could drive someone so far up the wall that she ran for the hills. It's on the tip of my tongue to ask Noah about her, but if he tells me something sad, like she's dead or abandoned them at birth, I don't know how to respond to things I can't do anything about. My sympathy just comes off disingenuous. He grips his handlebars, the veins in his forearms bulging out of his skin, and I tighten my hold as he takes off again, entering the main drag of town with all the shops lining the street. We pull up to a store and park, Noah backing into a space and turning off the bike.
"I'll teach you to ride if you want,"
Noah offers as we climb off and remove our helmets.
"If you stay."
I follow his lead, leaving my helmet on the other handlebar and turn my cap back around, following him onto the sidewalk. "You barely know me, and I'm not friendly," I mumble. "Why do you want me to stay?"
"Because nothing changes up on the peak. Not ever."
What does that mean? I enter the store, not responding, because I'm not sure what he's talking about.
"Hey, Cheryl,"
he calls out, and the lady at the counter smiles back at him as she hands a customer her bag. I look around, seeing the store is really small. For crying out loud, there's like six aisles. They better have ramen.
"Grab what you need," Noah tells me. "I'll meet you at the register."
And he heads off, disappearing down an aisle to the right. I take a basket from the stack, thankful he's headed in the opposite direction, and veer off to the back toward the pharmacy. The store is small, but it's kind of cute. It has the turn-of-the-century vibe, with an old-fashioned register and polished wood everywhere. I pass a bar with an old soda fountain and a menu of sundaes and other treats, a couple of patrons sitting on stools and enjoying homemade milkshakes. Stopping at the counter in the back of the store, I quickly look around for Noah before I address the pharmacist.
"May I help you?" he says with a smile.
"Yes," I say quietly. "I'd like to have a prescription transferred to here, if possible. Do I just give you the phone number of my pharmacy back home?"
"Oh, yes."
He pulls a pen out of his white jacket and slides a pad of paper over.
"That's easy. I'll just call your pharmacy. We can have it refilled for you today."
"Cool.
The number, please?"
I dictate the number, watching him write it down. 213-555-3100.
"Your name?"
Tiernan DeHaas. Birth date 11/1/01.
"And what is the prescription for?"
he asks. I glance around for Noah again. It's the only prescription I have with them. He raises his eyes, laughing a little.
"I just need the name so I know what to confirm with them."
I tap my foot. "Try Spintec," I answer quickly without moving my lips. He nods, as if he's never had an overly nosy and playful cousin who would just love to know why I'm on birth control, and why ever would I need it, locked on a mountain all winter without access to men. I watch him make the call, enter things on the computer, and finally hang up. He looks over at me.
"Give me 10 minutes, he says, before he turns around to head into the back.
I'm tempted to ask him to fill several months in advance, but I don't know yet if I'm staying, so if I need more to get me through the winter, I'll just come back.
with the truck and without Noah next time. Honestly, I don't even need to be on the pill, much less on it all winter, but it's easier to stay on the routine I've been on since I was 14 than to stop and have to start again. I moved through the store, finding a few things on my list here and there. Some snacks I like, more sunscreen, the multivitamins I forgot, and some candles. I grab a spare set of earbuds, some pens and paper, and I find the ramen in the last aisle. It's the cheap 47-cent stuff, but I want it. "Hey," a female voice says behind me. I turn, seeing a woman about my age staring at me. "Hi," I say back, but I retreat a step because she's close. She's in tight jeans, work boots, and has long dark hair hanging down in loose curls. Her hands are tucked into a fitted camo sweatshirt, and her full red lips are slightly pursed. "Nice hat," she says. "Is it?" I don't think I even read what it said before Noah gave it to me, and I put it on. It's not new, though. "Thank you." Her red lips are tight and her eyes narrow on me. Does she know me? I haven't met anyone yet. I continue around her, moving down the aisle. "Are you one of the racer's girlfriends?" she inquires, following me as I walk. I glance at her as I pick up a loofah and some body wash. Racer's girlfriends? Oh, right. There's a motocross scene up here. Not sure why she would think that has anything to do with me. "No, sorry." I continue down the aisle, but she keeps trailing me. "Then where did you get that hat?" "My hat." I stop and turn my head toward her, opening my mouth to answer, but then I close it again. Have I done something wrong? Who is she? "If you're not with motocross," she asks again, "then how do you get that swag?" "Someone gave it to me," I reply tightly, and move up to the register, grabbing a bag of coffee beans on my way. "Is there a problem?" "Just asking," she replies. "You don't live here, do you?" I almost snort. She sounds so hopeful. I keep my mouth shut, though. I'm not sure if this is a small-town thing, but where I'm from, we don't dole out personal information just because someone is an uncontrollable nosy parker. She might think I'm rude, but in LA, we call it not getting robbed, raped, or killed. "She does live here, actually." Noah answers her, coming up to my side. "She lives with us." And then he dumps an armful of crap onto the counter and puts his arm around me, grinning at the woman like he's rubbing something in. What's going on? But something catches my attention and I drop my gaze to the pile of stuff he's buying. I narrow my eyes as I count. 1, 2, 3, 8 boxes of condoms. 8. I shoot him a look, cocking an eyebrow. "You sure you don't need the economy size they sell online?" "Can I get it by tonight?" he retorts, looking down at me. I roll my eyes, but I kind of feel like I want to smile or laugh because he's such an idiot. But I hold it back. I look away because I can't respond with anything witty, and he just laughs, his demeanor cooling when he focuses his attention back on the woman. "Step off," he warns her. She looks between him and me and finally walks out as Cheryl starts to ring up our groceries. I pull a couple reusable grocery bags off the nearby rack and drop them on the counter, too. I guess I was right. She was being rude, because Noah seemed out of patience with her on arrival. "CeCe Diggins," he tells me, taking out the cash his father put on the table. "Gets real insecure when something prettier comes into town." "Meaning me?" "She won't be happy about you living with us," Noah adds. "Why?" "You'll find out." He laughs and takes the grocery bags. "I'm going to have too much fun watching this play out."
"Watching what play out?" I frown. I don't like drama. I let Noah carry the stuff outside as I run back to the pharmacy to pick up my prescription. I toss out the bag and slip the credit card-like pill package into my back pocket as I leave the store. As I approach the bike, I see a huge backpack secured in front of the handlebars, and I let out a breath, relieved I wouldn't have to try to carry this stuff and hold on to him on the ride home. I flip my hat backward again and pick up my helmet, seeing Noah staring across the street with his helmet still in his hand. A slight smirk plays on his lips. I follow his gaze. Some guy, the same guy, I think, that came to the house with the group of bikers yesterday, sits at a table at a cafe with a bunch of others, he and Noah locked in a stare. I thought he might be Caleb, but he doesn't look like he grew up milking cows and cleaning horse stalls. The guy is dressed in the kind of jeans that men who deep condition their hair wear, and he looks like his name is Blaine and his favorite type of girls are named Cassidy. You know him, right? I turn back to Noah. He nods.
Terrence Holcomb, up-and-coming motocross star.
And then he pulls me into his body, and a gasp lodges in my throat as he fastens my chin strap for me.
And he's not looking at me, Tiernan.
Noah gets close, his chest brushing mine and making tingles spread through my belly, and I suddenly go blank. Who were we talking about again? He leans in, his breath falling across my face, and I notice a 3-inch scar down his jaw as he gives me a wicked little smile. What are you doing? I ask. Why is he so close? But he just smirks again.
Rubbing it in, he answers,
and then his eyes dart behind me to the guy across the street as he tightens my strap.
That you're untouchable to him.
Because why? I'm yours? Gross. You're nauseating, I grumble, and he just chuckles, shoving me away playfully and slipping on his own helmet. We climb back on the bike and waste no time heading back toward home. I thought for sure he'd try to diddle around with friends or a girlfriend, but he races through town like he's in a hurry, or in a hurry to get me back. I start putting pieces together in my head. The little show he just put on for that guy in town. Jake's advice that I stay away from local guys. The order to put on a proper shirt before I left today. Father and son don't get along well, but they seem to have that in common, at least. Both of them are stifling. It's not entirely awful. I might have liked to see my father act that way from time to time. Really stifling is bad. A little stifling, I don't know. Kind of feels like someone cares, I guess. Maybe I would have liked more rules growing up. Unfortunately for Jake and Noah, I've learned to live without them, so it's a little late. I hold tight onto Noah as he climbs the roads up into the mountains again, but thankfully he's going much slower now because I feel gravity pulling me backward, and I'm afraid I'll slide off the bike. I fist my hands, my muscles burning as I hold on to him. When we get to a spot where the terrain evens out, I loosen my grip to relax my arms for a moment, and he pulls off to the side of the road, the bike resting at the edge of a precipice. My stomach flips a moment, but then I notice the view through the trees below. The town spreads before us in a valley, with the backdrop of the mountains, trees, and land lying in the distance. The great expanse, everything in one picture, makes my heart swell. Wow, I say under my breath. We sit there for several moments, taking in the view, and Noah removes his helmet, running his hand through his hair.
You don't talk much, do you? He asks.
I blink, coming back to reality. My parents just died. Should I be chatty? But I swallow the words before I can speak them. Their passing isn't why I am the way I am. But I'm not explaining myself just because everyone else has their idea of what normal should be.
My dad thinks you resent your parents, and that's why you're not sad about them dying, Noah says, still looking out at the valley below. I think you are sad, but not as much as you're angry, because actually, it was the other way around, wasn't it? They resented you.
I harden my jaw. He and his father talked about me? Who says I'm not sad? How would he know anything? Is there some checklist of specified behavior that's acceptable when family members die? Some people commit suicide after a loved one's death. Is that proof they're sadder than me? I drop my arms from his body.
We've got the internet here too, you know, he says. Hannes and Emilia de Haas. They were obsessed with each other.
He turns his head, so I can see his lips as he talks, but I'm frozen. He goes on.
And they had a kid because that's what they thought they were supposed to do, and then they realized parenthood wasn't all it was cracked up to be. Raising you took them away from each other.
I force the needles down my throat, feeling the tears start to pool, but I don't let them collect. How does he know all that?
So they turned you over to whoever they could as soon as you were old enough, he tells me. Boarding schools, sleepaway summer camps, nannies.
My chin shakes, and I let it because I know he can't see me.
You didn't resent your parents, he finally says. You loved them.
Hours later, long after I've gone to bed, I hear his words again. Raising you took them away from each other. They resented you. You loved them. No. I try to back away, but something has my hand, and it aches. I pull and yank, but the pain grows stronger, and I keep taking steps back, but no matter how hard I try, I'm not going anywhere, and I can't get my hand free. What has me? Let go, let go. I loved them once. I did, but... I rack my hand, trying to get it loose from whatever has it, but I can't turn, and I can't run. I loved them once, but not now. I don't know. I don't know. My eyes snap open, and I feel my cold thumb against the bare skin of my stomach. I blink and sit up, the pain in my hand throbbing as I wince. I look down and see my hand is caught in my t-shirt, the small hole I went to bed with, now a gaping tear in the shirt. I pull my hand free, fisting it to get the blood flowing again. Shit, I hiss. And then I shoot out my other hand, knocking my alarm clock off the nightstand with a growl. I came here to get space, to get away, but if anything, I'm more fucked up than when I came. 3 days and I'm having nightmares and night terrors for the first time since fourth grade. I don't need this shit. Noah had no business bringing up personal things with me, much less regarding a situation he knows nothing about. If I want to talk, I will. Wiping the sweat off my upper lip, I throw off the covers, turn on the lamp, and hit the ground, digging under the bed for my suitcase. I don't have to go home, but I don't have to stay here. They don't like me. I don't like them. There are tons of places where people will leave me alone. I've always wanted to go to Costa Rica, rent a treehouse, hike with the spiders and the snakes, live amongst the insects of unusual size. All of it sounds worlds better than here. Charging out of the room, I head downstairs, seeing every light is off and hearing the grandfather clock ticking away. Jake will be up in a few hours. I should leave before he wakes. I'm not sure how far I'll get. It'll probably take me 2 days just to walk back to town with my luggage. Swinging around the banister and heading into the kitchen, I open the door to the garage and jog down the 5 steps to the washer and dryer. Chills spread down my legs, bare in my sleep shorts from the cold night, and I open the dryer, pulling out the small load of clothes I'd dried earlier, including Noah's flannel. I pull out a new, clean t-shirt, lifting up my ripped one to quickly change. But the doorknob to the shop door suddenly jiggles. I jerk my head left, dropping my shirt back down. My mouth falls open, and 1,000 thoughts race through my head as I train my ears in case I misheard. Jake and Noah are upstairs asleep, right? It's after 1 in the morning. Less than a second later, the handle shakes again, and a thud lands on the other side of the door. I jump and grab a rusty steel bar off the work table. I stand frozen a moment longer before backing up and deciding to run back in the house to get my uncle. But before I can spin around,
The door is suddenly kicked open, and I suck in a breath as leaves blow in with the wind, and I see a mess of animal and blood as I stumble back into the railing and fall. I land on my ass and catch myself on my hands behind me, the breath knocked out of me. What the hell? A man steps over the threshold of the shop, wearing jeans and blood running down his bare chest from the dead animal carcass hanging around his neck. I watch, my mouth suddenly dry and my heart lodged in my throat, as he walks over to the long wooden table and slings the dead deer, foot-long antlers and all, onto the table and turns around to kick the shop door closed again. I gape in horror. Streams of blood run down his back, covering his spine, and I dart my eyes over to the animal, seeing its head hang limply off the table. I look away for a moment, pushing the bile back down my throat. Is he where the deer came from that was here when I arrived a few days ago, too? Turning around, his eyes meet mine as he heads to the wash basin next to the dryer. He looks away again and turns on the water. I try to wet my mouth, generate any kind of saliva, but the blood all over him. Jesus. I fist my palms behind me. Who? And then it finally hits me. This is Caleb, the older son. He pulls up the hose and leans over the sink, running the water over his dark hair and down his back, cleaning the mess off his body. When he stands up straight again, I watch as he rubs the water over the back of his neck, and I notice a thin, faint tattoo running vertically from the bottom of his skull to his shoulder. Some kind of script. His hands glide down over his stomach, making the muscles there flex and the water drench his jeans. The overhead bulb swings back and forth from the wind he let in, the light hitting him and then the darkness swallowing him up again. But I see him turn his head again, looking at me. His dark eyes fall down my body and stop, zoning in with his jaw flexing, and my stomach flips and then drops, every hair on my body standing on end. The room suddenly feels so small. I inhale a breath. I say, standing up. Caleb, right? He meets my eyes again, and I see that his aren't really dark after all. They're green. But he looks mad. His black eyebrows narrow, casting this shadow over his gaze, and he turns back around as if I'm not here, finishing his washing. He turns off the water and grabs a shop cloth, wiping off his face and neck, and then runs it over the top of his head, smoothing his hair back and soaking up the drenched strands. Hello? What's his problem? Why isn't he answering me? As he turns toward me, though, and tosses the shop cloth into the sink, he meets my eyes again, holding my stare, and then he cocks his head a little. I almost laugh. The gesture makes him look so innocent, like a curious puppy. But then his loaded eyes drop to my stomach again, and his chest rises and falls heavier, and I clench my thighs. Instinctively, I put my hand where his eyes are, and I feel it. The bare skin of my stomach. My breath catches in my throat, and I look down, seeing I'm still wearing my ripped t-shirt, the fabric torn and exposing my belly. I cringe. This whole time. But as I trail my hand, my fingers brush the exposed underside of my fucking breast, and I stop breathing altogether. I pull down my shirt as much as it will go and back up, ready to scramble for the stairs. As soon as I move, he moves, walking right for me. He approaches, droplets of water hanging from his skin, and I dart toward the stairs, but he shoots out his hand, grabs me, and shoves me into the wall instead. What? I gasp, fear curdling in my stomach. He presses his body into mine, taking my waist in one hand and planting his other hand on the wall above my head, and dips his forehead down to mine, looking into my eyes. The embrace is intimate, and it feels like he'll kiss me, but he doesn't. I open my mouth to say something, but his breath brushes my lips, hot and heady, and the room is spinning. He's cold, but I feel warmer inside, like I'm about to sweat. Reaching up, he takes the ribbon I'm wearing and runs it through his fingers before bringing a lock of my hair to his nose and smelling it. Then he dips to the side, running his nose over my ear, up my hairline, and across my forehead, inhaling me, smelling me. It's weird, but I can't move. I shiver, pleasure at the gesture making my body react. My skin tightens, the flesh of my nipples pebbling and chafing against my t-shirt, and I close my eyes for a moment, loving the electric current flowing under my skin. I should push him away. I can't lift my arms for some reason, though. I choke out. I don't think you should. But he reaches between us with one hand, his forehead resting on mine with fire in his eyes as he starts ripping open his belt and undoing his jeans. Whoa, what? My mouth falls open. Wait, stop. I plant my hands on his chest. You can't, what are you? But he presses himself into me, breathing harder with his teeth bared a little, and I feel the hard ridge of him rubbing between my legs. I exhale hard, my eyelids fluttering. He slides his hands down the back of my shorts, cupping my ass as he lifts me into his arms and spins us around. My stomach somersaults, and I can only grab onto him as he lands me down on the hood of a car, pulling my ass forward so he nestles between my legs. Caleb, I say, trying to push him away. Caleb! He fists the back of my hair and presses his body into mine as he comes down on my mouth, hungry and wild, kissing me and shutting me up. His tongue dives in and I moan with the throbbing down low. Stop! Holy shit! He rolls his hips into me, faster and faster, breathing hard as he bites and chews at my lips before sucking on my tongue so hard. My thighs are on fire. What the hell is he doing? Fuck! Have we met or something? I finally swallow. Stop! I shout, my pulse ringing in my ears. Stop! Just stop! But he comes down on top of me, forcing me back onto the car, and his hot mouth finds my stomach. I shake my head, tears hanging at the corners, because it feels so good, and I don't want it to. I don't want him to go lower. I don't want to wrap my legs around him. None of this feels good or warm, and none of it makes me feel soft on the inside like I could kiss him back. I close my eyes as his lips suck and nibble their way across my stomach, and I feel air hit my left breast, knowing it's popped out from the rip in the shirt again. I feel him pause, and I dig my nails into the car, because I know he sees it. I wait for it, wanting to shake my head to stop him, but failing at even trying, and then he catches my nipple between his teeth, his warm mouth sending heat pouring over my whole body. I let out a loud groan, hearing my nails screech across the hood of the car. Please stop, I murmur, but I know he hears me. He growls and yanks me back down to the end of the car, diving for my stomach again as he starts to pull off my sleep shorts. I grit my teeth together. Stop, I mutter. But he doesn't. His kisses only get lower, trailing over my hip bones as he eats me up, and warmth pools between my legs, almost burning with needing something there. Stop, I mouth. He gets my shorts and panties down over my ass and comes down, sucking my lower belly, just an inch above my clit, and I rise up, growling as I slap him across the face. Stop, I said! Stop! He freezes, looking at me in the eye and glaring. Sweat glistens down his neck, and his breathing is ragged as he digs his fingers in my hips, fisting his hands.
When someone tells you to stop, you stop, I bark. Can you fucking understand? Are you stupid or something?
And he snarls, grabbing me by my upper arms and scowling down at me. A whimper escapes, but I scowl right the fuck back. His chest heaves, and I can feel the heat on his breath and still see the desire in his eyes. And I feel it too, even though I hate to admit it. For a moment there, maybe longer, I wanted to do this. For a moment, I was soft again. It was hard to stop. But this is his fault. I told him to stop like 6 times, and I certainly didn't invite the attention. So his blue balls are on him. I don't have to love the first person I fuck, but I don't want to be scared either. He's like a machine. He glares down at me, not letting go, and I stare back.
Whoa, 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 hey, someone says, rushing into the garage. Stop! Man, get off her!
Noah comes up, pulling Caleb's fingers off my arms and pushing him away.
Dude, she ain't a townie,
he tells Caleb, holding his shoulders and looking him in the eye. But Caleb's glower is still on me. I quickly slide off the hood of the car and fix my shorts, seeing his gaze fall down my body again. Not a townie? Like it's okay to treat anyone like that?
Dude, look at me, Noah barks at him.
Slowly, Caleb pulls his gaze away and finally meets his brother's.
It's Dad's brother's daughter,
Noah explains, and I hear humor in his tone.
Remember? The stepbrother he hates? This is his kid.
Noah gestures to me.
She's family. She's staying with us for a while. You can't fuck her.
And then Noah releases him, laughing under his breath.
This isn't funny, I snap, and then I glare at Caleb, now able to finally find my goddamn voice. What the hell is the matter with you, huh?
Just cut him some slack, Noah says. He's always starving when he comes back from being in the woods this long.
Then eat!
That's what he was doing,
Noah shoots back, glancing at me. Eating. Eating me. Oh, you're fucking clever, aren't you? Assholes. Caleb watches me, cocking his head a little to the side again, and then he brings up his thumb, wiping the corner of his mouth like you do after a meal. In the woods. In, that's what they meant. Caleb disappears into the forest for spells. Maybe he should disappear again.
Why do you keep answering for him? I ask Noah.
Because he doesn't talk.
What?
He doesn't speak, Tiernan.
Noah turns his head only enough for me to see his lips move.
He hasn't spoken since he was 4 years old.
I look at Caleb, not sure how to process the information. A touch of pity winds through me, but I think he sees it, because he glares down at me as he refastens his jeans and yanks his belt free, the end of it snapping in the air with his anger. I flex my jaw.
Is he deaf too? I snap. I told him to stop.
He can hear you just fine. Noah sighs. He's just not used to women.
Saying no?
Women like you, Noah retorts.
Like me? There are plenty of girls like me in town. Caleb casts me one more look before he turns around and heads up the stairs, back into the house, and Noah faces me, his eyes taking in my clothes. I quickly pull my shirt down, but I'm too mad to be embarrassed. I can't remember why I came to the shop in the first place.
Mute? He's mute?
He can speak. Noah said he hasn't spoken since he was 4, not that he lost his ability to speak when he was 4. Why doesn't he talk? And what does he do in the woods by himself? I still see his eyes looking down at me when he pushed me into the wall and rested his forehead against mine. The way he looked at me. His mouth on my cheeks warm.
He won't do it again, Noah tells me,
turning around to face me with an amused smile. He didn't know who you were, Tiernan. Sorry.
He lingers for a moment longer and then turns to leave, following his brother. And I stand in the garage, staring at the slivers in the hood of the car where I scratched the paint just a few minutes ago. For several minutes, I'm lost in thought about where that would have gone if Noah hadn't come in, if I hadn't forced myself to push his brother away, and how much of it might not have been Caleb's fault.
Chapter 7. Tiernan. The next morning, giggles pierce the air, and I open my eyes, blinking away the sleep. That was a girl. Propping myself up on my elbows, I train my ears, hearing the steady rocking of something coming from Noah's bedroom, and then a moan, followed by something banging into the wall. I roll my eyes and fall back to the bed. They really are living their best life, aren't they? Must be nice to have your bed buddies come to you at the crack of dawn every morning. Doors open and close in the house, and I check my phone, seeing it's just after 5:30. Turning my head, I see my unpacked suitcase still laying open on the floor, next to the pile of clean laundry I'd brought up last night. I hadn't finished packing, and I hadn't changed my clothes. I was still wearing the shredded t-shirt Caleb found me in last night. Memories rush through my mind, and my chest starts rising and falling faster as everything that happened in the garage floods me again. Who knew I'd fold so easily? I was so ready to wrap my legs around anyone who showed me the least bit of attention. I close my eyes, still feeling it, the need for him to go lower. My hand finds my stomach under the covers, and for a moment I pretend it's his hand. Did I feel good to him? But I blink, shaking my head. No. No. I throw off the covers and sit up. His behavior was ridiculous. What's even more ridiculous is he wouldn't have tried to get it on with a complete stranger if it hadn't worked for him in the past. He didn't like what he felt. He was horny, and I could have been anyone. Standing up, I pull off my shirt, noticing a few red spots around the hem, and it only takes a moment before it hits me. Blood. The deer's blood. Ugh. He still had some on him when he was on top of me. I growl under my breath and throw the shirt over to the wastebasket, half of it catching on the rim and hanging over the side. Pulling on a new one, I grab my toothbrush and toothpaste, opening my bedroom door and heading for the bathroom. Moans, cries, and "Wow" by Post Malone carry out from Noah's room into the hallway, so I rush and swing open the door to the bathroom, seeing my uncle standing there at the sink, a towel wrapped around his waist. I stop, his wet torso and hair glistening in the dim light, and I quickly look away. This is a big house. It would have been prudent to add a second bathroom. I open my mouth to apologize at barging in, but the door is equipped with a lock. It's not my fault he didn't use it. The other door to the bathroom, the one that comes from his bedroom, opens, and I see the same woman appear that was here the other day. She wears a tight red halter top dress, her long brown hair pulled up into a ponytail, and black heels. She kisses him on the cheek, lingering long enough to nibble at his jaw a moment, and then walks out, squeezing past me with barely a look. I watch her walk down the stairs, disappearing, and then turn my head back around, instinctively glancing at the darkened stairwell leading up to Caleb's room.
Shower? Jake finally asks.
I turn around, meeting his eyes in the mirror as he wipes the toothpaste off his mouth. A drop of water spills down his back. No, I just wanted to brush my teeth. I turn to leave. I'll wait.
Four people in one shower, he calls out, stopping me. Don't be shy.
Would you be shy if I were walking around in a towel? I shoot back. Seriously. He meets my gaze, an amused tilt to his lips, and he nods.
I'll try to get into the habit of bringing my clothes with me to my shower, okay?
And then clarifies, I'll try. We've been without a woman in this house a long time.
I arch an eyebrow at him. There are constantly women in this house.
You know what I mean,
Jake says, knowing exactly what I'm thinking.
Whatever. You don't need to change your habits, I tell him, if I'm not staying.
He glances at me again and then grabs a can of shaving cream, not saying whatever it is I know he wants to. I walk in, shaking my head a little before wetting my toothbrush and applying toothpaste. I'm not waiting for him to get done. What kind of mountain man doesn't just grow a beard? I recap the toothpaste and toss it down behind the faucet.
You showered after work yesterday, I mumble, raising the toothbrush from my mouth. Do you normally take another one in the morning?
Only when I get dirty at night, too, he retorts.
I falter, darting my eyes up to see him rubbing shaving cream over his jaw and neck without missing a beat, because how else would a man get dirty in his own bed at night? I think of the woman with the toned thighs and red lips who just walked out of here. I blink and start brushing my teeth.
You did a good job on the stalls yesterday, he says.
I did?
The boys have been doing it their whole lives, and they just don't give a shit. It was nice to see it done how I would do it.
I nod once, but keep my head down as I brush. He's placating me.
Do you have a boyfriend, Tiernan? He asks.
I shoot my eyes up at him. He looks at me, shaving foam covering the lower half of his face as he washes off his hands.
Back home in LA? He clarifies. Do you have a boyfriend?
I spit the toothpaste out, but instead of answering, I go back to brushing.
Have you had any men?
He asks more bluntly when I don't respond.
Whatsoever?
I slow my strokes, my breathing turning shallow. Is he asking if I've had sex? Every inch of my clothing touches my skin, and my blood courses hot through my veins. I squeeze the toothbrush in my hand. Spitting once more, I rinse out my mouth and finally raise my eyes, looking at him in the mirror. What does he want from me?
You're still a girl,
he says, guessing the answer without me telling him.
And you still need some raising.
I watch him tilt his head back, glide the razor up his neck against the grain.
You should stay, he tells me. It's nice having a woman in the house.
I watch him, trying not to. The smooth, tan skin of his neck revealed with every stroke. The water still clinging to his muscular shoulders and chest. The way the towel hugs the V around his hips. And I blink and cast my eyes away, but I can't help but steal another glance, because I like looking at it. The way he and Caleb may not look alike in the face, but you can totally see they're related when they're half-dressed. Maybe I should tell him about last night, how his son cornered me and tried to screw me on the hood of his car, and how maybe this isn't the safest place for me after all. We don't get along. Noah pushes my bad buttons, and I'm sleeping even worse since I got here. Maybe I should tell him I'm leaving. But instead, I pick up the shaving cream, pour some foam into my hand, and start dabbing it on my face as he stops shaving to watch me. As soon as my cheeks are covered and I look like Santa, I pick up my toothbrush again to use the handle as a razor. You got no idea how to raise girls, I tell him. He smirks at me in the mirror.
Want me to make a man out of you then?
You can try. And I hold my toothbrush ready. Maybe he'll let me do some man's work then. He snorts and leans over the sink and I follow, taking his lead. Stroke by stroke, I mimic his technique, against the grain up the neck, with the grain down his cheek and jaw, and over the top of the upper lip. We stand side by side, peering into the mirror and stopping periodically to rinse off our razors before continuing. He catches my eye and smiles before leading me through the final strokes, but his arm brushing mine makes my heart beat harder as the smell of his clean body fills the bathroom. When we're done and only a few smudges of foam remain, he pulls a towel off the rack and cleans off my face, and for a minute I feel like a kid and want to laugh for some reason. But when he pulls the towel away, he looks down at me, and my hidden smile sinks to the bottom of my stomach, and so does his. He's close. His eyes hold mine, and we stand there, heat filling the room so hot I swallow, seeing his Adam's apple rise and then fall, too.
"Looks like I failed," he says, barely above a whisper. "There's no hiding what you are."
A girl. He almost sounds remorseful at that fact. He turns away, slowly wiping off his own face.
"I'm hungry. Pancakes?"
But I barely hear him, standing there and watching him, and the words flowing out of my mouth before I can stop them. "I may never be a man," I tell him, "but I won't always be a girl either." I pause, long enough to see him falter and his face fall, and I can't help the small smile that peeks out as I turn and leave the bathroom. Surely I can take on more responsibilities when I'm a woman. I pour some pancake batter onto the griddle, hearing it sizzle as I refill the ladle and pour another circle, one after the other. I watch the batter bubble against the heat, rubbing the smooth surface of my thumbnail. For once, I'm actually happy to be cooking their breakfast. Jake and Noah are outside, taking care of their morning chores, but I still haven't seen Caleb, and rather than hide in my room and dread running into him, I can just stay busy. Why the hell isn't my suitcase packed? After I left my uncle stunned stupid in the bathroom earlier, I dressed and made my bed, leaving my empty luggage abandoned on the floor. But even if the episode with Caleb last night had never happened, I'm not sure I would have gone through with packing it then either. I lay the ladle in the bowl and pick up the spatula, flipping the pancakes and making the batter splatter. Maybe that's why I always come home on school breaks, too desperate not to be alone. I whip around to grab the plate and see Caleb. I stop. He leans against the refrigerator, staring at me, and my heart jumps as I clench my thighs. How long has he been standing there? His green eyes watch me, the same curious expression he wore last night, and I can't even hear the branches outside blowing against the house because my pulse pounds in my ears. What is he staring at? Locking my jaw, I grab the plate off the island and spin back around, scooping the pancakes onto the plate. He's still dressed in jeans, but these ones are clean, and he looks showered, although his hair is disheveled like he just got up. I guess Jake doesn't hold him to the same standards he holds Noah and me with his 5:30 wake-up calls. His eyes burn my back, but after a moment I hear the fridge open and close, and then feel him approach my side. Is he going to apologize? What if I hadn't been a step cousin? What if I'd actually been blood when he decided to ignore my protests last night? Slowly, I clear the griddle and dole out 4 more scoops of batter as he pours himself a glass of juice. But even though my eyes are on my task, all I can see is him next to me. He smells like leather, like musky body wash. He must have just showered then. Last night it was rain, trees, firewood, and sweat. He smelled like the woods. Heat pulls between my legs at the memory. I shake my head. For Christ's sake. Leave the juice out, I tell him, but he doesn't listen. He turns around as if he didn't hear me and takes the juice, sticking it back into the refrigerator. You like blueberry? I ask. Buttermilk? I don't give a damn what he likes. I just want him to make me go upstairs and pack my suitcase. Chocolate chip? I keep going, pushing us both. Pumpkin? Whole grain? He picks up his glass of orange juice and strolls over to the table, gulping it as he goes on like I don't exist. I tighten my fist around the spatula as I flip the pancakes, breathing hard through my nose. "How many would you like?" I drone on. 3, 4? I glance over to see if he's nodding or shaking his head or holding up fingers to tell me how many he wants, but he just sets his glass down on the table and pulls out a chair. I pull out the plug of the griddle and add the fresh pancakes to the pile on the plate, grabbing the syrup and forks. The front door swings open and the floor creaks with footsteps as Jake and Noah come barreling in. How do they know when breakfast is ready? I carry the pancakes to the table, setting the plate down in the middle as Noah grabs a glass of milk and Jake washes his hands, both immediately over to the table. Steam from blueberry pancakes wafts into the air as the guys sit down, and I twist around to pick up the plates off the island, my anger still rising. I set a plate down in front of Jake, one down in front of Noah, and the last down in front of me, feeling Caleb's eyes on me because I didn't give him one. "I don't cook for you." Noah and Jake must realize something is happening because they stop moving. I glance up, seeing their eyes move between Caleb and me, and I know Noah can guess the tension between us, but I don't know if Jake knows yet. Noah probably didn't talk about last night for fear of getting his brother in trouble. Without blinking, though, Caleb picks up the plate of pancakes in the middle of the table, doles out 3 to Jake, 3 to Noah, and then pauses only a moment, holding my eyes, before dropping the plate back onto the table, right in front of himself, and taking the rest of the pancakes. Picking up the syrup, he pours it on his stack without leaving any for me. "Prick." Noah clears his throat, but I can hear the laugh, while Jake sighs, taking his plate and setting it down in front of me. Reaching over to the island, he takes another one and uses his fork to pick a couple of pancakes off Caleb's overloaded plate.
"You both met already, I see," Jake grumbles.
But no one responds as the boys start eating.
"This looks good, Tiernan,"
Jake says, trying to ease the tension.
"Blueberry pancakes are the only thing your father and I—"
"I don't care," I spit out and push the plate away. Everyone quiets, and I stand up and grab an apple from the fruit basket. Taking a bite, I walk over to fill up my water bottle from the refrigerator. I know I'm being rude, and I'm sorry for it. Maybe I'll take a hike, stretch my legs, give them some space. The kitchen is quiet for a few more moments, but I hear Noah speak up.
"I'm finishing the Lawrence bike today,"
he tells his father, I'd assume.
"The guys are coming. I'm gonna take it out to Ransom's Run. Test it out." "Don't take all day," Jake tells him, his tone a bite now. "We have more work to do."
His patience from a moment ago is gone, and I know I pissed him off. I look over and see him turn to Caleb next as he stabs his plate with his fork.
"And don't you disappear either," he orders his oldest.
All the men fall silent, hurrying through their breakfast, and the tension in the room now thicker than mud. I twist the lid back on and prepare to leave the dishes for them, but when I turn around to go, I catch Caleb staring at me again, except his eyes are on my legs. I wear ripped jean shorts, not too short, and a flannel buttoned up to my neck. I drift my gaze around the table, noticing I have more clothes on than any of them. Jake and Caleb aren't wearing any shirts, and Noah's tee has the sides cut out, giving glimpses of the smooth, tan chest underneath. Caleb's black hair against his sun-kissed face, Jake's toned shoulders and narrow waist, the veins in Noah's forearms, and I straighten, swallow, and turn around, quickly leaving the room. I need to get out of here. I hit the gas and pull the truck up the driveway until I reach the top of the incline, feeling the gravel kick up under me. Turning off the engine, I take the work gloves off the passenger side seat and hop out of the truck, heading for the bed as I pull them on.
"You find your way okay?"
Jake approaches, dropping the tailgate for me. I nod.
"The guys were helpful?"
Yes. We both hop up into the bed to start unloading the hay. After breakfast, he'd asked me to take the truck to town to pick up some bales of hay, and I happily agreed once I learned I could go on my own. Some air, some space. It was just as good as a hike, and hey, I got to go to my first tack and feed store. Thankfully, it sported no racks with tabloids for sale, so I was able to avoid news from home. Music and laughter come from the garage, and I look over, seeing a group of motorbikes parked off to the side. Must be the friends Noah was talking about when he said he was taking the bike out today. A couple of women hang out nearby, as others talk in the garage, and I watch them in their jeans and summer tops, laughing and smiling. How much longer will the weather be nice enough to ride? Seems like fun. Jake and I unload the hay, gripping the wires and hauling each bale over to the stable. One of the girls smiles as I pass. None of them wear makeup, no fancy manicures, and no stylish clothes, but they don't need it. They're pretty, dressed to play, and for a moment, I want to be one of them. I carry a bale into the barn, walking it down to a stall. Is Caleb going with them? How does he get along with friends without speaking? Does he have friends? I mean, if he's like that as a mute, can you imagine what would come out of his mouth if he spoke? I shake my head. Curiosity swirls in my mind over what happened to him at the age of 4 that made him stop talking, but I push the thought away. We've all got problems.
I want to hear you, someone pants. I slow as I hit the stall. Show me what you want me to do, she whispers. I almost drop the hay. Her voice is barely audible, so soft like she's hanging on by a thread. I set the hay down, taking a step back. It could be anyone. There's lots of people here right now, and I don't want to be embarrassed. Slowly, I retreat. But then I hear a grunt, a shuffle of hay, and a small cry. I halt. I'm gonna make you moan, she tells him. You're gonna like it that much.
I don't know why, but I take a soft step forward. Following the sounds to the far stall at the end of the stable, I get to the door with the top half partially open and listen closely again.
Come on, she moans.
I hold my breath and peer through the crack in the door. Skin and hands fill my view as he threads his fingers through her long black hair, and she kneels between his legs and sucks his. I look away for a second, heat rising to my cheeks, but her soft little whimpers draw my attention again. Her head moves up and down on him, her hands running up his jean-clad thighs and gripping his belt, pulling his pants down more so that I see his hips and the curve of his ass. I can't see her face, and I can't see what she's doing to him, but I know. I slide my eyes up, taking in his muscles, skin, shiny with sweat again, and before I get to his face, I know who it is. Caleb has his head tilted back, his eyes closed, and breathes hard as he grips her hair, forcing her up and down on his cock. The muscles in his forearms flex, and his hair damn near hangs in his eyes, but I watch his face, the woman forgotten. Sweat dampens the ends of his hair, sticking to his skin, and his lips tighten periodically because he likes it. I hear her moan, even with him in her mouth, and he pulls her down on him again and again, as his eyebrows pinch together. And then his eyes open. His head tilts forward again, and his gaze pins me through the crack like he knew I was here the whole time. Shit. I stop breathing again. My body tenses and shame burns my skin, but he starts moving faster, pumping himself into her mouth now as his eyes burn a hole right through me. My mouth opens, because it's the only thing that will move. I don't even see her anymore as he leans forward into her, one hand still in her hair and one hand holding a sideboard as he fucks her mouth.
His hips pump faster and faster, his eyes suddenly piercing like they did last night when he pushed me into the wall and smelled me. A drop of sweat falls down my stomach under my flannel, and I almost find myself starting to move with him, entranced. I lean into the door, soaking up the only few centimeters closer I can get. She groans. He and I stare at each other, and all I see is how he would have moved with me last night, if I hadn't stopped him. But then a moan escapes, and I don't realize it came from me until I see the corner of his mouth curl into a smile. I suck in a breath, finally realizing what the hell I'm doing. Fuck. I turn away, putting my hand over my mouth and squeezing my eyes shut. Shit. Behind me, I hear him grunt under his breath and then hiss, fast, heavy breathing pouring in and out of his lungs as I lean against the stall, listening to him come. I shudder, she whimpers, and I run out of the stable and into the late morning air. Why did I do that? What the hell was I doing? A light layer of sweat covers my back, and I wish I had a tank top on under this so I could pull off the long-sleeved shirt. He's vile. Jake was right. He and Noah are nothing compared to that. And I'll bet he enjoys himself, too, reaping all the benefits of playing the mysterious, tortured soul who doesn't speak, but it's just so alluring and sweet because women want to save him. I don't care what happened to him when he was 4. And I did nothing wrong. I heard a cry. I went to look. Shock prevented me from moving once I saw what it was. That's it. I pull Noah's baseball cap off and turn it around, the bill shielding me from the sun as I head back to the truck where Jake is sweeping out the bed. Hey, Tiernan, I hear Noah call. I tense, wondering if he saw me watching his brother. Turning around, I see everyone loading onto their bikes, the 2 girls I saw earlier climbing onto their own, and Noah smiling from his. I raise my eyebrows. You want to come with us? He asks. I look behind him, recognizing the guy from town yesterday. Terrence, the one he apparently doesn't like, but I guess they travel in the same circles, and it's a small town, so... He pulls on his helmet, a smile in his eyes as he watches me. I glance at Jake for a way out. He jumps down from the bed, jerking his chin at me. I have to make a run to town anyway. Go ahead, he tells me. Have fun, but stay with Noah. My stomach sinks. I don't like being around people I don't know. I don't like being around people. When I turn back around, though, I see Caleb strolling out of the stables, pulling his shirt on, and the girl he had in the stall following him. The girl from the store yesterday, the one who tried to get in my face. I stare at her, tight jeans, loose green tank top, long black hair, and a brick sits in my stomach. Come on. Noah holds a helmet out to me. Ride with me. And for some reason, I kind of want to now. My feet move without thinking. I walk over to Noah, meeting Terrence Holcomb's eyes for a moment as I pass. But as soon as I stop at Noah's bike, turn my cap around and reach for the helmet, another hand shoots out and pulls it away before I can get to it. I look up, seeing Caleb. He only hesitates a moment, glaring down at me, before tossing the helmet to the ground and away from me. Taking my arm, he pulls me away from the bikes, and I stumble and straighten just in time as he walks into me, forcing me backward. My heart hammers in my chest as he stares down at me, and then he jerks his chin toward the house. He doesn't have to say a word for me to know he's ordering me inside. Away from them, away from him. Caleb, I hear Noah chide. But snickers and snorts break out around the group, and despite the twinge of anger I feel, my eyes start to burn. Away. He looks down at me, jerking his chin again. Away. You're not going. Jake stands in the truck bed, suddenly aware something is going on, and I clench my jaw to fight the tears. Suddenly, I want nothing more than to be away, where I can't be seen or looked at or detested. No, it's fine, I say quietly to Noah, choking on the tears in my throat. And I back away, turning for the house.
Tiernan, Jake calls, but I cut him off.
I didn't want to go anyway, I tell him, my eyes watering. Sounds boring. And I jog up the stairs and walk into the house, hearing the engines rev, and after a moment, the high-pitched whir of them speeding away. I head for the staircase, but I halt in the middle of the living room, realizing there's nothing up there for me either. Another closed door, another place to hide, another room to pass the time until... I drop my eyes, needles prickling the back of my throat. Until I don't have to worry about being seen. My chin trembles and a tear falls. I swipe it away. I don't want to think, because then I'll be fucking alone and that's all I ever am. The truck fires up outside and I close my eyes, thinking I should be relieved my uncle is leaving too. I should be thankful he didn't come in after me. Neither one of us is the heart-to-heart kind, are we? He's giving me space. But he just leaves, the sound of his engine disappearing down the road, and I stand there for less than a minute before setting off upstairs and opening my bedroom door. I bypass my suitcase, still laying empty on the floor, and grab my backpack, double-checking my little first aid kit is inside, and take my sunscreen, stuffing it in the front pocket. Pulling my phone off the charger, I leave the room and head downstairs, filling up a water bottle and packing a few snacks. I walk toward the front door, but then I stop, remembering. Protection. I head back through the kitchen and open the door to the garage, stepping down the few stairs and gazing at the row of rifles on the rack. I wish I didn't have to carry one. I'd look like an idiot, or a terrorist, walking down Ventura with a firearm slung over my shoulder. But my uncle is right. This isn't the city. I could run into trouble. I chew my lips, no idea what I'm really looking at. I don't know about preciseness or ease of use, so I just grab the one I know how to use and open the drawer underneath, finding the bullets. Loading the weapon, I swing the strap of the rifle over my shoulder. Quickly, I sift through my uncle's tools, finding a flashlight, and then grab a clean towel off the basket on top of the dryer. I put everything in my pack, zip it up, and pull it on, ready to go. Stepping out of the shop and around the house, I head for the woods, climbing the steep incline Jake took me through on the horse the other day. I think I remember the way. It's a straight shot up and around some rocks, and then I continue on, going deeper into the trees. There should be a worn path, I would think. I should text my uncle and let him know where I'm going, but instead I keep my phone tucked away in my pocket. Reaching the top of the hill, I follow the dirt path around some boulders, keeping my eyes open and my ears trained, but after a few minutes, the headache that always seems to be aching around the back of my head fades away, and I inhale deep breaths, smelling the needles of the evergreens and the wet earth under my shoes. Maybe I should turn back and put on Noah's old boots he loaned me yesterday, but I can't care that my sneakers have zero traction right now. My stomach is unknotting, and all I can hear is the creaking of the trees and the water coming from somewhere. After a while, I'm not even paying attention to my surroundings anymore. I follow the trail I'm not sure is an actual trail, but it winds through the trees, guiding me deeper into the quiet and the solitude, and I peer through to see if I can make out the peak in the distance, but it's too thick. I take off Noah's hat and shake out my locks, the breeze feeling good on my scalp and the wind clearing my head. I close my eyes. But suddenly, I hear a rock fall behind me, bouncing off a boulder or something, and I jerk around, scanning the woods I just walked through. The pulse in my neck throbs as the sunlight streams through the trees to the forest floor, and I train my eyes, trying to see around trunks and rocks. I reach to my side, clutching the butt of the rifle.
If it's an animal, I won't see it until it wants me to. I swallow, trying to catch sight of anything. But there's nothing. No movement. I remain still for a few more moments, making sure nothing is there, and turn around, occasionally looking over my shoulder and keeping my eyes open just in case. It's probably nothing. Trees fall, rocks spill, animals scurry. I reach the top of another steep incline, the land leveling out, and look at the trail ahead, trying to remember how much farther it is. But then I look left, doing a double take, and see it. I smile, like actually smile. I head for the pond Jake and I passed the other day, relieved I didn't get lost. I climb down the rocks and come to the little beach and look out at the rock walls surrounding the water. Lush foliage hugs the sides, trees tower overhead, but there's enough sunlight getting through to shimmer across the still water. It's empty, no people, no noise, and the warmth of the sun feels good. I debate for a moment if I should strip, glancing around as if someone may be watching, but I decide to keep my clothes on, or most of them. I set the rifle down and drop my pack before unbuttoning Noah's shirt. Wearing a sports bra underneath, I pull off his shirt and drop it to the ground with my hat, starting my Spotify playlist on my phone and setting it down before walking into the water with my sneakers on. I'll get dry on the walk back. I'd rather not be in my underwear if anyone shows up, or shoeless if an animal does. I wade out and then shoot off, look back at it playing as I swim out to the middle of the small pond. Another smile I can't hold back spreads across my face. This feels good. The cool water sending chills over my body, giving me a sudden burst of energy, and I dive down and then come back up, my hair now soaked and slicked back. Lying back, I float, the weightlessness and water in my ears making me feel alone, but not lonely for once. I glide my fingers under the water, my hair floating around me, and I smile again, because it's the first time since I've been here that the world feels like a big place. It helps to get outside, to get lost a little. I always forgot that. A faint rumble hits my ears, and I lift my head up, treading water as I see a dirt bike pull up to the beach. My face falls, and my body tenses. Who is that? He takes off his helmet, a dark blonde head coming into view as his hair sticks up, kind of all messy sexy, and it takes me less than a second to recognize Terrence Halcombe, whom I've yet to actually meet. Hey, he calls out, climbing off his bike. I don't respond. What is he doing here? I look and listen. Are they all coming? He heads for the water, pulling off his boots and socks, and I realize he's coming in. Keeping his jeans on, he walks into the pond, pulling off his shirt and tossing it back to the rocks. He reaches down and scoops up some water, splashing it on his face, running it over his hair and down the back of his neck, and wetting his chest. Love the tribal tattoos. Wonder which tribe he belongs to. I almost snort. He tips his chin at me. How's the water out there? Cold. He dives in, submerging completely and heading straight for me. He pops up, splashing and smoothing his hair back, grinning. I start moving off to the side so I can swim around him and get out. Relax, he tells me. Not everything with a penis is a threat. Which is exactly what someone with a penis would say. You're Tiernan, right? He says, and then cocks his head. Terrence Halcombe. I pause, treading water. I thought you all went to ride bikes. He smiles. They went to ride. I snuck off. You followed me. He must have overheard me say I wanted to go for a hike when we were all back at the house and guessed I'd wind up here. I start swimming for the shore. If you go, he says,
I don't know if I'll be able to get you alone again.
I turn my head, looking at him.
They're very protective of their property.
I stop and face him, my feet touching the ground now. I'm not their property.
Everything on their property is their property.
He circles me, the water coming up to both our shoulders.
They live by different rules up here, Tiernan.
As much as I'd like to argue with him, I think Jake, Noah, and Caleb would agree with him. Jake's warning about local guys, Caleb sending me back in the house instead of letting me join them on the motorcycles, Noah and his possessiveness in town yesterday. What do you want? I ask him, changing the subject.
Your Chapel Peak's shiny new toy, he tells me. Just checking you out.
I raise my eyebrows.
Yeah, that sounded cheesier than I thought it would, he mumbles. Sorry.
Why? I reply.
Toys are meant to be played with.
His mouth drops open and we stare at each other as the loaded words hangs between us. And then, as if on cue, we both start laughing at the same time.
That had extra cheese, he teases.
Yeah, but you seemed a little hopeful for a second there. Neither of us make a move to get out, just continue to tread water and circle each other slowly.
See any alligators yet?
He asks. I narrow my eyes.
Huh? In the pond, he explains. We have some in here, you know.
Oh? No, actually, they left, I tell him. I did see some unicorns, though. He chuckles, knowing it will take more than that to mess with me.
Very good, he says. My ex totally fell for that one. She was so dumb she thought the District of Columbia was America's new state.
I slide my hands through the water, my body drifting back out into the pond again, and him inching, getting closer. His eyes zone in, intense as they calmly watch me, and my stomach flips. I know what he wants. Will he feel like Caleb did?
Do you have a boyfriend?
He asks, his deep voice almost a whisper. Do you care? He smirks.
I think you need one.
Please. Judging from the look in his eyes, he wouldn't care if I were married. And I'm not looking for an attachment. Maybe the Vanderbergs are right in how they live. They get what they need when they need it, and they don't have to be held accountable because they may as well live on the far side of the moon for 6 months out of the year. No woman, no sane person, wants that life. Perfect situation for them.
Maybe me too. They go to town every Friday night, Terrence tells me, inching closer, to have some fun.
I smile to myself. They don't need to go to town for that. Town comes to them.
They always get the prettiest ones, too, he goes on. Until now. The prettiest one they'll keep home and to themselves, won't they?
I tense. He comes in closer, but I don't back away.
What if I were to come up here Friday night when you're alone?
He says, low.
Would you let me in the house?
His body is so close, and I fist my hands in the water because there's an ache low in my belly that won't go away. And maybe I should act. Maybe I should do something I would never, because I want to feel, and because the ache has been there since my first morning here and the horseback ride.
Would you want to have some fun of your own?
Terrence taunts. I swallow, letting my imagination wander for a split second.
We could do it now, I guess. Right here on the beach, probably for hours before anyone came to find me. The guys get their fun. Why shouldn't I? I'll never see this man after I leave anyway. He swims into me, backing me up and walking into me. When I get only waist deep, he wraps an arm around my waist and pulls me in. I plant my hands on his chest. No.